updates, which it should do, this thing should come on. Facebook's actually changed how they do the live streaming, so I'm not sure whether this is going to work, but I'm going to press play on there, and hopefully, hopefully that works. Okay, cool. So we're live, everybody. We are live, Brain Food Live on air, episode 112, bringing it to you every Friday, folks. And we're never going to miss one of these, so I'm very, very, very pleased to be broadcasting all the way from Hong Kong with my friend Maury, who's all the way from New York. So we're going to do a proper transatlantic, trans-Pacific, I don't even know how many oceans we're crossing. Yeah,
we're literally
on opposite sides of the world to try and pull this together. So welcome everybody to the show. We've got a fantastic topic for us to talk about. I think super educational, and it's going to be one of these where it's cross-disciplinary. We're going to learn a bunch of things from people who are not in recruiting, and they're going to teach us how to tell stories in a more effective way. Anyway, before we kind of kick off, just wanted to do some sound checks, obviously. So if for people who can hear me on Crowdcast, can you just indicate that the sound quality is okay? Actually, sound quality is terrible, but just say you can hear me okay. That's going to be fine. We should be multicasting on LinkedIn. I think so. So if you can hear me on LinkedIn, just give me a thumbs up or a thumbs down or something like that. That would be useful to know. I'm on hotel Wi-Fi here, so I actually can't see the screens that usually show me stuff that says, yeah, that's on. I can't see it. Literally.
You're good? You're good? Can
you monitor
your girl's telling me?
Can you monitor me on LinkedIn, Maury? Are we live there? But let me know if you can hear me okay on LinkedIn, folks. That would be awesome. Yes, I can see myself. That's fine. And we're live on Facebook. I definitely know that's true because we punched it and we're ready to go. Okay, cool. Listen, a quick word to our sponsors. Thank you so much to our sponsors, CA3 today. They are an employer branding consultancy. They've got lots of interesting toolkits, actually. Also producing onboarding technology as well. So very much a professional services and tool-based business. So if you do care about improving how you communicate to your audience, definitely check this business out. They're a really cool boutique out of the UK, but they've been working with some awesome brands and will give you that kind of concierge experience, which is very different from those big agency type of vibes. Anyway, that's them. Let's get on with the show. Storytel, let's introduce firstly Maury Hannigan. Maury, great to see you. Talking, actually. It's been a year or so since you last touched base. And, you know, obviously, wonderful to see you on the show. For the people who don't know you, do you want to quickly intro yourself, like who you are and what it is you do?
Sure. I'm Maury Hannigan. I'm CEO of SparkStart. We're an eight-year-old HR tech firm out of New York that has a video platform designed for talent acquisition. So whether it's putting hiring manager video into job descriptions or just creating, approving, sharing employer brand videos, if it's for video, if it's for helping the whole recruitment marketing, that's where we are. And we've got an award-winning platform and we love video. So,
and you're the perfect... All that background is a big part of the reason why Maury stepped in to help us with this, because we all know Adam can do everything, right? However, we definitely needed to upgrade him today.
And I'm better looking.
Well, 100%. I mean, no doubt about that. Maury, let's go to you first before we bring the crowd in. I don't know about you, but I suddenly started seeing storytelling as a skill appear in all of these recruiter bios over the last 12 months or so. It's like suddenly we want to become storytellers. I think we all kind of get it that it's a very powerful way to communicate. But can you sort of encapsulate for us what is the difference between storytelling and, you know, marketing? Like, weren't we storytelling before? Is it something different fundamentally, or we just rebadge something and push it out there as the latest fad?
Yeah, it's fundamentally different. It's, I don't know if you know, I came from Procter & Gamble, right, from marketing, classic consumer packaged goods marketing. And it would never occur to P&G or Pepsi, the other place I worked, that you would advertise a job with the usage instructions on the back of the box. Yet you come over to recruiting and people use job descriptions and they think they're, you know, they're marketing job opportunities. That doesn't engage anybody. It doesn't help people envision anything. And so slowly we're realizing we really do need to do something that's going to connect with people. And particularly now, we were talking just earlier about all the automation that's gone on. You know, there's some wonderful advancements in automation, take some of the drudge work out, but it's disconnected candidates from the opportunities and the people and making them feel like, you know, they know people there, they could fit in there. This is their tribe. This is a place where they're going to thrive. And you don't do that through, you know, job descriptions, God forbid. You need to really tell a story that's going to connect with them on an emotional level and really help them envision themselves in the job. So, yeah, there's been a real shift to just pushing out information and often dry information that compliance or legal wrote for you to really humanizing it. And we've got lots of great guests who are going to talk a lot about what the definition of storytelling is and so forth. But I think there's been a real fundamental shift that there's been a lot of sophistication in TA people and employer brand people to understand there's a story here to tell that needs to connect with someone. It's not just about putting out the bullet points so candidates can read through it.
You know what? You've just given me a revelation there. I like to come at things like without basically with a potato instead of a brain. And you've just come in here and really opened my eyes a little bit on something. Because sort of B2C consumer world, it's not a functional sell, is it? You're not just selling the functional item. You're presenting a story, you're presenting a lifestyle, you're presenting an emotional sort of situation, a scene even, where the person might solve that problem. If you think about all the advertising we used to watch on TV, all of that consumer stuff, it's not a list of instructions. Now, the problem we have in recruiting is that the predominant way in which people discover your employer brand is through a job ad. That is the first obvious chance that someone encounters your business. And a couple of reasons for this. I think it's because of the propagation of job ads, because you publish one, multi-post, right? You distribute it to 50 different places. All of these places can be shared. No doubt you're just speaking to your hiring managers and your colleagues, say, hey, please share my job. Boom, it just amplifies like that again. First time anybody encounters your brand or your company is a list of instructions. Have a think about that. Not the most compelling thing. So, okay, very, very interesting to hear your perspective on that, Maury, which is great stuff. Give us one more thing about storytelling. So you mentioned something about the vision aspect. Like, it can't be like too prosaic, I guess. It can't just be a set of instructions. It needs to present a wider view, like a bit of a wider scope, I guess. Can you just fill in some of those details a little bit? How does that work?
Recruiting is really about both sides envisioning a match, right? You always say when you do university recruiting, right? Students often used to show up in suits, or they show up in dress. It's not that you don't think students run around in t-shirts and jeans, but they're trying to help the recruiter envision them as an employee. The reverse is also true. As a good recruiter, a good recruiting organization, you're trying to help the employee or the candidate envision themselves as an employee. It's like, trying this job, how would it feel to come here every day to work? Does this feel like a place you're going to thrive, you're going to learn, you're going to do all of that? So it's really about envisioning the future. And to any extent you can help a candidate see themselves in the role, see themselves interacting with it, then you start planting that seed, then you start really engaging them. So that's really the goal. It's much more of an emotional connection than it is, yes, they do Python this, yes, they've got these tools, yes, they've got that. Is this a place I really want to be? At the end of the day, it's an emotional decision for people to take a job. Otherwise, AI would be running it from their side. We'd get rid of the humans altogether, but that doesn't happen.
I hope everyone's making notes. There's going to be a contract sort of on your way. Adam's fired. Maury's going to be the person is co-hosting for me before. But basically, you're saying there's a couple of things amazing there. So envisioning, that's a key thing to remember. You've got to imagine a candidate that can imagine themselves working for your business. That's what you're aiming to do. That's all the sales effort, marketing effort. That's what you want to achieve. So that's an amazing thing to think about. The second thing to think about is that the storytelling is also two-way. I haven't even thought about that. But the candidates are also telling a story, right? They're also trying to present their fit to the job also. Mm-hmm. So this thing isn't just one way. It's a two-way type of exercise. So, okay, let's move on. Before we bring the guests on, final question for you, Maury. What is the one mistake you see most often? So we know it's just job ads, like people are just, firstly, we'll fix that at some other point. But when people do attempt to tell a story in our industry, recruiting wise, what is the mistake that you spot as a fairly consistent thing?
Thank you for asking me that, because it drives me nuts. I see people all the time who are trying to tell the story they want to tell as opposed to the story the candidate wants to hear. And that's such a fundamental mistake. People go, oh, you know, we've done our EVP, or we have our three pillars here, and here's what it is we want to push out about our organization. And you go to the candidate side and you go, do they care at all? Is this helping them with their process? It's not understanding what information the candidate wants at what point in the journey. The information they want before they ever hit that apply button, they ever respond to a recruiter, is dramatically different than the information they want before they decide to accept or not accept. Right? There's a whole information system there. And being able to match up what they want to know at a given point in time with what you're telling them, that's what makes it work. So you'll find I'm a huge critic of the, you know, the 2-minute recruiting video that doesn't answer anybody's question at any point in the process. Our information needs are very specific, and there's a real journey that goes on there. So that's the biggest mistake, is wanting to get your story out there, whether the listener is interested or not, being so focused on, I need to get these 3 points across, and they potentially could care less. What they really want to know is 3 other things that would bring them in and make a, you know, it'd be a place they could thrive and really love. But you've got to listen to that. So huge, huge mistake there.
And that's actually one of the classic creative writing errors, isn't it? I mean, I don't know if you've ever been a creative writing course, or you've read any books about that, or even been on any English lit type stuff. But they teach you, look, yes, you need to tell your story, but you know, you can't be so ego driven that all you're doing is writing entirely, you know, the thing you want. You got to understand where the audience is and where they want to go. And your job is to lead the audience, in this case, the candidate, on along that journey. And I love the idea of having a different types of information as you go through that candidate journey. Have you thought about that, folks? It's not just like, oh, download the damn, you know, story or EB at them at any time you want. No, it's about thinking about what stage of the decision-making process the candidate is in, and then presenting the appropriate bit of information, the appropriate part of the story that would encourage them to continue on that flow. Again, that's almost like we'll bring these storytellers on. They could tell us how to describe that in the creative arts world, but it's probably something to do of like even plot development and things like narrative, right? It's that kind of thing. So let's get that language in. Firstly, let's bring on Frankie Kemp. I'm going to see, Frankie, by the way, is kind of double booked, so she might not be able to spend too much time with us today. But I'm going to bring her on real quick, see whether we can get 5 minutes with Frankie. And we're also going to bring on Noel as well, who is the creative director at CA3. And I think he's going to give us a little bit of a take on, you know, what the world looks like. I guess, in fact, when they come on, I'll explain what I want to get. But I think Frankie and Noel are two people that have one foot in the creative space and one foot in our space. So I'd be interested to know what their description of the state of the industry is as far as storytelling skills are concerned. And that must be Noel, I guess.
Hello.
Frankie.
How are you?
Yeah, not quite Frankie.
No, I hope you don't mind me saying, but I'm shocked and hugely impressed by the beard, man. I mean, I didn't expect it. I feel really quite impressed by that. It's an awesome, awesome presentation.
I had it before lockdown. It's not a lockdown beard, but you know, thank you.
It looks great. And there's Frankie as well. Frankie, great to see you. Okay.
Good morning, Frankie. Good morning, Maury.
Quick intro. Let's do some quick intros. Noel, let's go with you first. For people who don't know you, can you quickly intro yourself, who you are, what it is you do?
I can, absolutely, yes. So my name's Noel Thompson. I'm the director of Crayons at CA3, so the sponsors of today's event. And just like you said, you know, CA3 is a creative employee brand agency, and we're also purpose-driven. Our purpose is all about great work and great relationships. You know, it's not rocket science. We basically think one creates the other and vice versa. And we're lucky enough to work with some fantastic clients, GE Healthcare, Johnson Matthey, Rolls-Royce, Natlas Group, Audley Group, Expedia Group, all the groups, basically. And we've been going for about 8 years.
Is that the customer criteria if they're not a group?
Yeah, must have a group.
No, that's fantastic. And we'll definitely dive into your specific role, Noor, because being a creative director in a corporate space, I think is a fascinating thing to explore. And Frankie, let's go to you. Who are you and what it is you do?
So I'm an award-winning storyteller, an actor, a script writer. I've written the script for TV presenters, such as the Eurovision Song Contest. I did not write the songs. Underline, embolden, okay? Innocent, my lord. So, and what I do is I bring the skills of theatre and psychology to businesses, actually, to tech experts in finance, engineering, and IT. And what I do is I drive change through communication, and they're really immersive, liberating experiences. I mean, one of my taglines is be more you. And I've done this for massive companies like JP Morgan, right to scale ups and individuals and new starters, because we all need it to be, you know, less vanilla and more thriller, really.
Well, let's dive into that right away, Frankie, because you've introduced a point that I think we kind of touched on at the beginning, which is this corporate demand for the creative skills. Now, when I entered the world of work, it was very much, there was a split, wasn't there? It was like, oh, the creative types, you go to media, you go to do whatever. And then, you know, all of you white collar folks, you're like doing the tech, you're doing the sales, you're doing all that. It's very separate worlds, right? Mm-hmm. Why has that changed? Why is there suddenly seems to be this demand from the corporate world, oh, actually we do need to have more creativity, storytelling, kind of this emotionally driven way of communicating? Any thoughts on that, Noel or Frankie, with this one?
Personally, I think, firstly, I have clients who say, I'm not creative. I don't need to be creative. And I'll say, do you need to be resourceful? Do you need to solve problems? Oh, yeah. And I think what they're realizing is that if you want people to be innovative and you want them to have autonomy, a la Daniel Pink, then they have to have ideas and feel free to do that. So compartmentalizing it doesn't work. We all need that. So when I work with engineers, they go, no, I'm not creative. But I go, you're resourceful, right? And they go, well, yeah. Well, I said, then it's the same skill set. And I also think with specific regards to storytelling, to pick up on what Maury said earlier, nobody really gives a damn about your pillars. You know, you can have the pillars of the Parthenon, but I want to know, if I'm in your company, what's the journey that I'm going to go on? You know, what's in it for me? And they realize that because they need to hire talent and keep it, that story is like a magnet that's going to pull people in.
And Frankie, how do you connect with them? Everything I see is so sterile and so, I mean, I hate it when people read, you know, script or the writing comes straight from corporate communications and it's full of buzzwords. How do you really connect to someone? How do you get them to go, wow, that could be me, or it's inspirational? Where's the key there?
Yeah, it's interesting because somebody actually put something in the chat, like, how do you know what story to tell? If you're an employer, how do you know what's going to draw candidates? And one of the things I say is, like, ask the people that are already there. So ask them. You know, we should be asking more, not telling them these are our values. Like, I'm going to ask Noel what his experience is of working at that company. And that, otherwise you're just leaving it to sort of divining, and that's not very reliable.
I think a lot of the challenges, especially recruiters are facing these days, is this idea that they've been told they need to tell more stories. They know that it's a good idea. You know, that's why we're all here today to listen to it. But actually, it's not their day-to-day role. So how do you tell these stories? Where do you tell these stories? You know, I'm meant to now be managing emails, social posts, 10 different social channels. You know, I've got to write blog articles, do this, do that. And I think that's why there's been a rise, going back to your question, Hung, about more creatives coming into every area of the industry, because we need these skills now in order to connect with the people we're trying to attract to these new jobs.
Can I just like quickly say something right now? So one thing that is very clear is that I've framed that the requirement for storytelling purely on the idea of effectively employer branding. But actually, as you mentioned, Frankie, it's so much about creativity and creative skills that it's relevant to any function in the business, whether you're involved in the communication to the business outside or not. There is a clear demand for businesses that we need to have mentally agile, fluid intelligence, so to speak, you know, ability to handle unprecedented issues, be resourceful in solving problems. All of those things that are being creative will help cultivate those skills. And I would say traditionally, a lot of corporate people have felt fearful of. As you say, creative kind of comes with a very a badge that's culturally very different from the corporate world. And you might immediately withdraw from that and think, I'm not that person, you know. So that's the first thing maybe to achieve, to try and, you know, lower that intimidation factor and make sure that everyone understands that, you know, we all have the ability to be creative.
And just acknowledge we all want to hear stories. I mean, we pay to go to the movies. We're drawn to them. So it's not like we have to force this on people. It's our entertainment. We want to do that. But I think a lot of people don't know how to tell a story. And Frankie, I just shared your wonderful download on how to tell a story, how to put some structure to it, how to put an arc to it. Do you want to just talk about that for a second? Because I think it'd be really helpful to people.
Go ahead.
It's derived from Pixar. So when Pixar create a scaffold, it's a storyline. And it's in this scaffold, you start with like the background. And then, so you give the story some context. And then a challenge will eventually arise. And then everything becomes a bit more complex. And there's a difficulty until you reach the apex. And then it starts to unravel or resolve, and then it will become a new situation, which is, when I looked at it, I thought, well, this is exactly the same as what writers use or script writers will use, which is the dramatic arc. So the dramatic arc, which is in the download, just shows, because some people just see it more visually rather than a list. So with a dramatic arc, it just goes like this. It's like, oh, here's the background. Then it gets more convoluted, and then there's a problem, a challenge, and then we go round the other end and there's a new beginning, or, you know, there's a new situation over here. So like it's a transformation.
Isn't it fair to say there is that may actually be the archetypal story? What are your thoughts on that, Noah? Where you start off, there's a problem, that problem causes your character. It could be the candidate in this case, or it could be the employer as an avatar of a person. They have a problem they have to try and solve. It's very difficult. They go down a little bit and then they discover the solution. They go back up again and, you know, the resolution. Is that basically a story then? Can we like literally boil it down to the brass tacks?
I think it is. I think you should, because I mean, whenever you're communicating something, you need to keep it simple. The more stuff you try and throw in, the less people are going to remember about that story or whatever you're trying to say. So by keeping it simple and by ultimately trying to get across, like we talk about one message, what one message do you truly want to tell? If people grab hold of that message, if they connect with it emotionally, then they're going to remember it and they're going to want to find out more. Don't, you know, shoehorn in all of your values or your pillars and you're this or you're that, you know. And likewise, people might be going, oh, but where do I get these stories from? And what we talk about is, well, you know, internally, there'll be a load of amazing stories. But when was the last time you actually took the time to try and dig them up, I guess? Because it's not, you know, when people have great experiences at work, they're not often not natural storytellers. But that doesn't mean there's not a story there to tell. Yeah. You know, that's where obviously, you know, organizers and else can help. But ultimately, finding those great stories and then bringing them to life is really exciting.
Well, a question to all of you, like, how do you do that then? I mean, I'm sure there's people watching here, listening to it and thinking, look, we're running this business. It's pretty, you know, it's fairly simple bit of recruiting company. What do you mean stories? What's the exercise or the framework we can use to pull those stories out? Is there a step-by-step that some of these folks can follow?
I mean, I've, the way we often do it, because it's not really a step-by-step for us, the first thing for us is finding the story. And often that comes about that locating that individual or even a team within your organization that has something amazing to tell. Often we do this, the easiest way first and foremost is to say, look, do you have like a company awards that you run every year that awards people for living your values or doing great things? And often you'll find that instantly you've just got then a load of stories which are already ready made. That's why they're getting this award. That's why you're saying out of everyone in the organization, this is a great story to tell. So that's always a good place to start, I find. And then beyond that, you know, reaching out to the business and just asking for them to tell you great stories.
There are stories there. Everybody's got a story, right? Everyone comes to work, they've growth. And there's not just one story. I mean, in any large organization, you've got lots of cultures and microcultures and lots of different challenges and lots of different arcs. It's different for entry-level employees versus very senior experts. You're surrounded by stories. It's a matter of just being able to identify them and pull them out.
Yeah. And that goes back to what you were saying, sorry, Maury, about finding a story that resonates with the audience. Because different stories will resonate with different people. So it's not like you have to have one story fits all. You know, there's different stories which will appeal to different people.
Quickly on this, I think it's also important to recognize that stories don't have to be like tremendous victories, right? They don't have to be these like you know if you're just a person that happens to be working in a job in a company, the stuff that's happening in your day-to-day sort of working for that company that constitutes the basis of a story. When you're dealing with a client that's a very difficult client, for instance, and you had these conversations and it all went wrong because this happened, and then you know something else happened that turned it around, and suddenly you know you're rebuilding that relationship. That is a story. It doesn't have to necessarily be a triumph. In fact, think about the great stories that we consume for entertainment. Oftentimes, they're tragedies, right? So, although we'll kind of leave it to one side, whether it's a useful thing to talk about tragedies for companies, but maybe it is. You know, maybe it's not a bad thing to also talk about some of the tough stuff. Sophie's mentioned something really important in the chat stream, which Maury, I think you try to deal with. But I want to elevate this to the conversation, which is. Basically, it's easier for a certain type of personality to be a storyteller than another. Now, is that true? And I think it might be, but if it isn't, tell me if I'm wrong. And if that's the case, then what do we do about it? Do we kind of leave it to the extroverted people to identify those, or do we find a way for more introverted people also to participate in this? Let's go to you on that, Frankie, first.
Well, I think everybody... I mean, I work with tech experts, and so what I do is I pull their story out of them, and they say it in a way that just fills, it's not somebody else's words, it's their words. And, you know, this is it. It should be the ability to tell it how you want to tell it, which is why we ditched the pillars, thank you. I will ask people, so basically I will kind of dig deep and find out what the story is, and then I'll just get them to chat to me, because it's human, this is what we do. And you know, and it does, again, it doesn't have to be a long like hero's journey where you come back from the abyss. It might be like three sentences, that's all. And I don't know if you ever heard Ernest Hemingway's alleged challenge, which was for sale, baby shoes never worn. For sale, baby shoes never worn. He was challenged to make a 6-word story. And within that, the listener is inputting the background, which is what we all do anyway. We transfer ourselves into it. Doesn't have to be a long story. And there are many models. So I've given you one model in the download. But what I'll do is I'll listen to people, find out, you know, where the pattern is, and then we'll just, what we end up doing actually is that bit like what Maury was saying earlier, we throw stuff out because you need to simplify it.
You know what? There's a really good point that was made in this idea of having a very short or almost incomplete story. So I think one of the problems people have is that they may feel that they need to tell every single fact of that situation. Yeah. And that actually is too much to ask for the person telling the story, but it's also too much to ask for the person consuming it, because it's like too much information. And if you don't mind, if people aren't offended by me making that observation, but it's also what, if you're like a boring person might do, right? They're like literally telling it too, they're overly contextualizing it.
Oh, that's mad.
And it's very hard to be there, right? Human beings are creative. The reason why we know is because we fill in the gaps. As the six-word story that you mentioned by Hemingway, I immediately saw the story, by the way. I was almost like emotionally touched by it as well. We filled in all of those gaps. We understood exactly what those six words were talking about. And there's an element there where you have to have confidence in your candidates or your employees or the people you're trying to attract to your company, that they're going to help you complete the story. You don't have to fill it completely. Okay, really, really cool. Final one on this uncovering the story type of thing. Let's say there is a business that wants to control it a little bit tighter. They say, look, here is the employer brand. You know, they're engaging one of you three. They're saying, okay, here's the employer brand. This is what we stand for. And you're saying, okay, right, it's the same cliched stuff. How do we actually kind of humanize this and make this into, you know, something that's compelling? What are the techniques to deal with a situation like that?
No. Well, I mean, I would say first and foremost, I think even if an employer brand is, let's say, not as unique as maybe you'd like it, going back to what we've all been saying, a story is always unique. So there's always going to be something there which is going to be appealing, which is compelling, which is exciting, which is sad, whatever it is. So I think that's not the issue. For me, though, it's when you have an employer brand which it feels very restrictive. And it's like, well, you have to say exactly this. And I guess what we always try and do is get our clients to take a step back from that. So, you know, it ultimately, what you're saying is your message needs to be this. But how can we tell that story in a way which engages with the audience you want? Because there's no point you spending money putting something out, you know, whether it's a video, whether it's a podcast, whether it's a suite of social posts, whatever it is, said in this way, if it's not going to appeal to the people you're actually looking to attract or the people you're looking to inspire internally, there's just no use. I mean, you know, these days it's rare that you'll find that happens, because, you know, most agencies are creating employer brands which have that flexibility because it needs it. But yeah, how does this story tie into your overall employer brand message? But we're not going to say it the same every single time, because you feel like you're a robot, really, as a company, I think.
What about some exercises on creativity? So I don't know about you, but I'm like suddenly inspired to start writing a novel and stuff right away, or at least exploring some creativity, right? I mean, it's useful, I think, as a training exercise to try and do. Is there anything that you've learned in your own career? Because I'm sure to be able to teach and coach people how to get better at creativity, how do you get better at creativity? Is there like a couple of things that you do that keeps you in shape, or, you know, things that you can share with the wider group? Any thoughts on that? Let's go to you, actually, Noel, with this. Have you got any thoughts?
The big one for me, I mean, realistically, I mean, it's for everything that I do, not just storytelling, is just to absorb everything you can. And obviously during the pandemic, that's been a bit harder because most of us have been sat in a bedroom like this or in a living room where we can't, you know, but, you know, going out and absorbing the different ways that people are telling stories through visual imagery, through video, through film, through written word, through all those kind of things, and just learning how they're doing it. And I've got a folder on my laptop, you know, massively huge of links to great stories, you know, because finding inspiration when you're faced with a challenging brief, and then suddenly like, remember how that person told this story, this is how we could bring that kind of thing to life. And I think for me, that's the best thing I do day in, day out, really, is just acknowledging a great story and then trying to keep track of it.
So number one, just keep note of stories. So if you want to be more creative, folks, get a notepad out or have a place or a bookmark that you store. That was a great way that story was told. It made an impact on me. file it away and try and figure out why it was good. So collect it. Okay, go to you, Maury. Any thoughts on how to be more creative?
I'll switch the question a little bit because there's a lot of chatter about, you know, how do you find the stories? How do you find the compelling stories? And I think the real answer is just listen. If you're back in a place where you can go to lunch with a colleague, if you can jump on over beers is a great way to just get people to tell their stories about why are you here? Why do you keep coming to work every day? What is it you're learning? What's going on? They've got the stories. It's really a matter of drawing them out. It's not so much about you as the, you know, the TA person creating the story. It's really being able to hear the story and then figuring out how to communicate that back to an audience in a way that's going to resonate with them. So, I mean, other folks need to come up. You get screenwriters. I mean, Frankie has to create stories out of nothing. Luckily, on the TA world, we don't have to create stories out of nothing. We don't have to come up with them. We just have to hear them. So that's the skill. It's listen for them because people have got them. They'll spit them out if you let them.
And actually, Maury, I would also add to your point to say, in order to listen, you kind of need to ask the right question that promotes a full response. So in other words, if you ended up asking the closed questions, you know, yes, no answer type questions, you're going to get a lot of yes, no responses. There's no story there. But if you ask the why question, suddenly you get a lot more coming out. So think about your questioning, folks. How are you using questions when you're trying to surface up stories from your employees, colleagues, or whatnot? So second point to think about, your questioning style. Okay, go to you finally, Frankie. Give us a creativity tip, things that kind of make you keep sharp on being creative.
Oh, right. Well, one thing that works really well for me is my puke pad. Not literally, though it was today, but it was food poisoning. Anyway, so it's where you just write. It comes from Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way. And it's a great discipline. And what it does is you just write three sides of unlined A4 paper, and you just tip your brain onto that paper and do it at the beginning of the day. Because what it does is it just clears out all the drudge and that stops us from thinking. You know, it's like emptying the barrel. And I found that while I'm writing, usually after a page and a half, I manage to solve issues. So that's the first thing. But then also, when you think you're not a great storyteller, we are always telling stories. And you need to think, well, hang on, I just told a story. That was good. Write it down. So it's extending what Noel says about listening to other people's stories, but also listen to yourself and your own stories, because you've already got them there. And when I'm freeing people up, I do a lot of improv to help them do that. Yes.
You know, two great things there. So I love the idea of having a ritual of just dumping your words down somewhere. So don't have them just stew away and potentially become like toxic stuff. Actually, I think Stephen King does this, and probably a lot of writers probably sit down and just pound it out. I think I read somewhere that Stephen King literally first thing before he does anything is to write 3,000 words. And he says he doesn't have a plan, doesn't have an objective. He just pounds it out. And I think that's a mental exercise. It's obviously become meditative for him, but it also sharpens his ability to use the words, and then boom, 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 out it goes. So I love that as a technique. Okay, fantastic. Listen, we're going to keep going with this conversation. It's been awesome sort of talking with you two so far. Please stay with us for the rest of the show. We might get a chance to bring you back, but we'll leave you guys here at this point. Frankie, great to see you. I hope you feel a little bit better. Stay with us if you can. And Noel, great to see you as well. And stay with us if you can. We'll be keeping on the chat stream.
Okay, thanks.
Great. What a wonderful thing. I hope people are making notes. There's some really kind of useful bullet points that you can say, you know what, this is going to help me be more creative, and potentially could be a useful framework for you to apply when you're trying to extract information from your colleagues. Now, there's a few things happening on the chat stream, which is super interesting. Let's touch on them, which is the C-suite is controlling how we talk about things. Now, I think there's a tension here where everyone knows that employee-created content, employee-generated content is the thing that people pay most attention to. We all know this, by the way, folks. I would just measure your own kind of communication on things like LinkedIn. Things travel further if it's posted from your personal profile compared to posted from your company profile, no matter how big your company brand is. There's no doubt that people want to hear from people. But what do you do when you've got a C-level person that's hammering it down and controlling it? And sometimes with reason, you know, if they're a business that is always in the spotlight, they want to try and play it neutral, they don't want to attract undue attention, they may have a legit reason to do it and have a fear for this. How do we handle that situation? What are your thoughts on that, Maury?
I mean, you've also got proprietary information you need to be careful about. And while, you know, we're all going to say trust your employees, you do need some kind of check on the system because people are people. They'll make jokes that aren't funny or aren't appropriate. They'll say things that just, you know, aren't the right thing at the right time. So you do need to have some kind of oversight. Now, don't strangle the life out of it. But that's, and you just need to set up a process. You can't fight that. You know, we've seen people go, oh, we're just going to have all our employee ambassadors go out there and they're just going to constantly tweet and they're constantly going to make videos and they're just going to go. And that makes people heebie-jeebie and those generally don't succeed. You need to acknowledge that there is a need for some, you know, quality consistency, some oversight, just to make sure you don't end up, you know, doing things that in hindsight people went, oh yeah, I guess that wasn't the best thing to throw out there. So it's a matter of being practical and building your process of how are you going to generate the content? You know, whose eyes are going to be there? You know, this doesn't need to go all the way up the ladder. Hopefully it doesn't need to go all the way through legal for every single thing you want to say. But is there a check? Is there someone kind of monitoring? Is there coaching going on up front for people to say, hey, here are the kinds of things I'd like you to talk about. Here are the things that would be helpful for a candidate to know right now. It really needs to be thoughtful. It doesn't have to be a big project, but it does need to be thoughtful in terms of not just flinging it out there, but really managing this, right? There's a story there to be had.
There is a requirement for process. So the two diametric opposites, to use it as an illustration, you've got a C-level person that's saying nobody says anything, lockdown. And then you've got the other side, which is a free-for-all. Both of those are probably not ideal, right? The two components need to have a dialogue. There needs to be a process between them. And we need to kind of have an emergent way in which your business is able to tell the story. And in fact, that itself is as good a sign as to your distinctiveness as a business is how you do that. You know, so you could even treat it as a way to explore how your business truly is. I think a useful exercise to get involved with.
Yeah, and realistically, I mean, pilots are great. If you've got C-suite who's just all heebie-jeebie about, oh my God, you know, what are we going to be flinging out there? Start small. Start with your hard to hire. Let some of your people talk. Keep it to a couple of folks. Get them over that fear that people are going to be out there being grossly inappropriate or unprofessional. There is a real transition. I mean, we see it from the video side. Everybody's so used to professionally produced video that's professionally lit, boomed mic, all the rest of it. And they're scared to death that you're going to get dirty video or low quality. Well, we all do perfect. I mean, the cameras on your phones are incredible quality. Start small. Let people get comfortable with it. Don't sort of tell them, hey, we're going to put out 600 videos tomorrow, or we're going to have 600 tweets go out from our employees. You know, it's a process. They need to learn too. They've come from a different perspective, a different school about what's professional, what's right. The world has shifted on them. You've got to bring them along on that journey because it has shifted and the need for information is just so acute. You've got to start pulling it out in real volume. You can't just have, you know, the one piece of corporate communication, the one brand ad that's going to solve it for everybody. So you got to drag them along and always, you know, piecemeal it, pilot it, let them get used to it. Show them what you can do.
And the additional benefit of having more, if you like, pieces of this story is that everyone actually gets skilled at doing it. If you kind of load it up to have, oh, this is our yearly video, then you know what? You're not going to develop the institutional skills to be able to produce video because you've only done it once a year. It needs to be something that you're very comfortable with doing. So, okay, let's talk about medium here. So I'm going to bring on a friend of mine. I haven't seen him for a while, actually, so this is a good opportunity to catch up. But let's see whether we can bring on Charlie Moretti, who is the owner and producer of Bright Shadow Films. So this is a, Charlie can introduce himself when he's coming on, but I'll be very interested to know on the video medium, which I know film and video is slightly different, but it's still moving picture. There he is. Charlie, how are you doing, sir?
Hello. Hey, hi, Maury. Hi, Hung. Thank you so much for having me. Such a pleasure. Such an international show.
Yes, indeed. Great to see you, Charlie. Been a while, man. And sorry that we're catching up on in this framework, because I think you messaged me a couple of weeks ago and said, "Hung, we haven't talked for ages." And I said, "Yeah, come on my show. We'll do it there." And that was kind of rude. So we'll definitely have to catch up properly after this, man. But let's dive into it. Firstly, actually, who the hell are you and what it is you do, Charlie? Let's introduce yourself properly here.
So I'm Charlie Moretti. I'm a filmmaker, I'm a producer, I've done film and TV. My main experience was actually in China, in Shanghai, where we had a production company for 12 years doing documentaries, corporate, a lot of commercials, a lot of strategic comms. But now we're mostly film and TV back in the UK for the last 5 years. So fantastic. I developed series, both short in terms of short films, medium in terms of feature films, and very long for TV series that go on for hours.
All right, great. I'll throw one out straight at you. So you must get lots of scripts or things coming at you in some way. Like, how do you like pass that? How do you decide, okay, this one is worth exploring, this one is terrible, throw it out? I mean, what is it, completely intuitive, or is there anything is there a pattern to what is a good or bad story?
There is definitely a structure to what is a good or bad story. And you look for this, and you essentially, you do something that is very contradictory. On the one hand, you look for something that makes sense from a story structure point of view. And on the other, you're trying to look for something that you've never seen before and that completely blows your mind away. Just to jump on one thing that was said earlier, I'd like to state formally that creativity is not a dirty word. We are all creative, whether we're introvert or extrovert, creativity is a practice. And the question is whether or not you allow yourself to do that practice on a regular basis, or whether you just keep it for special occasion or never. And that's really up to you. You can be creative as much as you want, anytime, any day. And I like saying this, it's not, you don't have to be a film person to be creative. You can be creative in your daily life, no matter when you want. Sorry, back on the script though.
No, I think that's a very important point, because a lot of people have been beaten out of them, I'm afraid to say. In the school type, the school period, I don't think sometimes we don't handle creativity very well, and we make people scared of it. But if you just observe children, for instance, before they get involved in any kind of like system, they're always playing, they're always creating, aren't they? They're always doing stuff. You know, you can't have a 3-year-old running around that isn't actually playing and making things. So we're definitely creative. We just need to cultivate it. I love what you said about. You're looking for structure, which means you've seen it before, but you're also looking for something you haven't seen before. So how does that tension work, and how do you know the thing you haven't seen before is actually a brilliant idea compared to actually this is just nonsense?
It's a bit of a gut feeling. It's also a lot about your own values. It goes back to what you were saying earlier. It depends whether it speaks to you as an audience member. So if somebody sends me a story about three pillars of a company, it's not going to cut it. I'm going to be like, well, thank you very much. No. If it's a story about an engaging character in a new situation, ideally what you want to find is something that seems similar with a situation that is slightly new, an obstacle you haven't really seen, but somehow relates to your life. And with an unexpected outcome that actually relates to you, but you never thought about. Is that new truth about, it's about finding the universal truth that you haven't come across, you haven't thought about, but you get enlightened thanks to the movie, and you go, oh, wow, I never thought about it that way, but it is relatable to me, and I could apply this in my life. So that's where art touches you, both on an emotional level and ideally changes you a little bit, you know, broadens your perspective. It makes you think about something you haven't come across. And that's the strength of a beautiful story, because that's the difference between, you know, having a list of data points by this happened, this happened, this happened, and having something that has meaning. And of course, the meaning is something you hold within yourself. It's not, you know, it's we create the meaning, like Frankie was doing with a story with six words. You create the world. It's your world and your meaning. But we tease it out of you. We go, think about this, think about that, and think about this, and see how you connect the dots. And if you're good at this, people will connect the dots in a way that's unique to them, but which you kind of teased out of them.
You know what? There's a couple
brilliant
of things
for that, recruiting. Sorry, yeah. But that's just brilliant for recruiting, because that's what you're trying to do to people. Be that inspirational of saying, hey, your career could go here. You could have this kind of satisfaction. You could have this kind of challenge. Connecting so they see something of themselves, but something that's the next step. I love that for recruiting.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Sorry, I wanted just to sort of add something, because when I was listening to you guys earlier, I had this sort of image that came up to my mind, and I'd like to take the sort of the candidate's perspective for a second and be sort of on their side. You know, we're all heroes of our own story, right? Like, you know, being in a job is part of who we are. It's part of our identity. It's part of the story we tell ourselves, part of the story we tell our friends. You know, I went for this interview and I went for that interview and I'm working for this company and I'm doing that. And when you go for a job, you're essentially looking at what's the next chapter of your story. So if you think of your life as a, you know, an ongoing TV show, and you're looking for that job, you're asking yourself, what does that next episode look like? And what is the adventure I'm going to have there? And when you were asking sort of Maury earlier, what's the, you know, how do you connect with an audience? For me, it's about authenticity, about the job, and saying, you know what, these are not just the job description, but these are the challenges you're going to have. And if we go back to what Frankie was saying, it's the call to adventure. You're asking candidates to come on an adventure with you. And for that adventure to be compelling, it has to be authentic to what it is, but also have, and this is the billion-dollar secret that Hung casually flirted about with earlier, but didn't actually put his finger on it. All the big tentpole movies, all the Avenger movies, whichever one, all the billion-dollar movies are all about a hero struggling to overcome adversity and succeeding. And essentially, that's what you're asking to your candidates. You're asking them to come on an adventure with you, hopefully to achieve whatever your strategic vision happens to be. But the strategic vision cannot be something that is simple and a done deal. Otherwise, it wouldn't be your strategic vision. There has to be a challenge. There has to be something to overcome. And hopefully that candidate is the perfect person to help you overcome it. That should be the pitch.
You know what? I've got to stop you now, Charlie, because you're saying too many intelligent things in one moment. And I can't actually write. I was going to write notes about it because I want to preserve it so I can just like get it in my mind. Couple of things I thought you said was really interesting about the structure of the story, like it needs to be resonant. So in other words, something that the person doesn't have to make a lot of cognitive effort to try and understand, you know, what the hell this is all about. Like it resonates with them at some level, but it's not exact, because if it's exact, it's boring. It has to be almost adjacent or at a tangent to what they're familiar with. It's like a new circumstance, but they can understand or see the elements of that situation going on. So there's a subtext that they get, even though, you know, the background or the props or even the actors might be different. They can see that situation. They've been in there somehow. So that is something that's quite interesting to think about when you're doing any kind of story you're projecting to the outside audience, or even when you're doing any internal comms. I think about how you resonate with that audience. What are the things you're trying to say? You can't replicate everything in such a way that it becomes just boring. It needs to be something that they can kind of see that is, as you say, Charlie, something kind of new, but kind of not. It's almost like that's the magic elixir there. Okay, cool. I think you said something else that was so interesting, Charlie. My mind has been blown and I can't recall what it is.
Let me jump in. I'd love to pull Mary Ellen in, because she's got ideas on stories and hero stories that she's in there. But while you're doing that, Charlie, because you've done such great short stuff, and one of the things that we all know is candidates' attention is really small. Really short, particularly, I mean, we know from our research at the very beginning of a job search, people have got, you know, they're not committed to this job yet. They don't know anything about it. They've got a really short attention span. What thoughts have you got on how do you tell a story in a condensed version? How do you know, if you've got 2 hours, that's great. Nobody in our world has got 2 hours. You know, you're just not going to get a candidate's attention that long. So how do you tell a short story well and engage somebody?
I mean, there are multiple solutions. I mean, there's a lot of variation on you know, sort of story structure. But the simplest one, it goes back to the commercial. And the simplest commercial, the TVC, the 30-second ad, almost always, or, you know, a lot of the time has the same structure, problem, solution. And ideally, you find what your problem is authentically, and you make it relevant to your candidate. It has to be the same thing. It's, we want to change the world like this. We are trying to achieve that. well, we find it difficult to do this, dot, dot, dot. And hopefully they'll fill in the blank of, oh, I find this difficult too. And we are looking for somebody who can do that, maybe. Or that's how we do it, like sort of create the problem and share the problem in a sort of coherent way and say, you know, do you want to hear more? Do you have something to contribute? And then it becomes a discussion. In fact, the best kind of pitches, you know, in Hollywood, we pitch a lot. And but the rule is, don't do a pitch. I mean, like, pitch never goes, and here's my pitch. Do you want to buy it? Yes. Never happens. It's more like, I see this like this, I see this like that. And then they go, oh, but can we do this? And can we add this? And what if we do this? Then you know you have a conversation. It becomes a creative collaboration. And that's what you want with the candidate. So then to, you know, dance with you a bit and go, yes, I see myself do this, and why don't we do that? And you might actually get some more insight as to how to do this in a better way or different way, or certainly clarify your outcomes.
Okay, let me just restate that, as I think that was a genius moment. Basically, it's creative collaboration. Even when it's internal, you're trying to figure out, oh, what the story is. Don't sit in the room and try and like coin it yourself. Go and interact with people and see whether you can get that sort of, have them contribute. It's the same way of leaving the story a little bit empty so that the audience can fill in the gaps, right? I think someone like Tarantino is classic at that. He never actually gives you the context. He just throws you into the story. You have to fill it in. You have to work it out. He doesn't go through a big explainer. You know, there's no narrator telling you over the top what's going on. You have to kind of just roll with it. So that's the kind of style I think is something we could think about when we're trying to be creative with these things. And additionally, this is also what we want when we've actually pushed it. So when it's out there, don't feel that it needs to be absolutely completely comprehensive, because the audience itself is going to help fill in those gaps.
And I love the idea that you're starting a conversation with the candidate. You don't have to tell the entire, you know, this doesn't have to be an entire novel. You're trying to spark interest. You're trying to get them to engage in the story themselves. And I love that thought of, you know, think of it as almost installments. You know, here's a little bit about our organization. Does this, you know, pique your interest? Does that have any resonance with you? Come back and learn a little bit more. Maybe you see it on a LinkedIn post. Maybe you go to the website and see something different. There are lots of ways to get the story out there. And those pieces of it just need to be compelling. They don't have to be the entire story. It doesn't have to be everything you want to say about the organization.
Of course. You have two tools that are very useful. One is the open loop, which would be something like this. So next time when we talk about sequels on the next episode, I'd love to tell you more about that. And then you've planted the seed. You're not saying more. You're like, oh, yeah, maybe there's more. And the other one, of course, is the cliffhanger. You know, you leave with something that just, yeah, but I want more. What do you mean? We're going to talk about pay next time. Cut. And then, you know, we don't have time now, but, you know. And then, okay, cool. I want to talk more. I want to have more. It's
This is genius. This is genius. Because you imagine a lot. I just imagine like an employer branding scenario where, you know, you actually create a series instead of like one video that you push out and that's it. No, you just like give them chunks. Could be 60 seconds. Could be TikTok style. And then you just give them enough to think, okay, you've had the 45 seconds of value. Then I'm going to give you 5 seconds to say you should watch the next thing. And then you've got them in that kind of, yeah, I'm hungry for it. So that's fantastic.
And just, we're seeing clients that have, the most I've seen is 632 recruiting videos. 600 that are out there. And we've got clients that have like 300 videos. All, you know, under 30 seconds of chat, we're talking about 2 minutes. I think at the beginning of any candidate's journey, 30 seconds is as long as you're going to get them. Longer once they get involved and they're committed, but up front if you're going to grab them. But just, yeah, lots of little nuggets. You're just trying to hook them and bring them into your process. So short and lots, you know, if you're thinking about one recruiting video, stop thinking about that. That's not going to do it for anybody. It really is, who's the candidate? What information do they want? Your cybersecurity candidate has got entirely different information needs than your sales candidate and your internal audit candidate, right? They are completely different animals. They want to know about different things. So if you're going to connect the information to the candidate, think about lots of little nuggets, not the recruiting video with the drone shot of the building and I've got the storyboard for that. It's been done 1,000 times. And Charlie would reject it in a heartbeat because there's nothing new there.
I've just tried to invite Mary Ellen, but there might be some technical problems. So let's keep going as we are for the time being. Mary Ellen, if you can get on, I think there should be a pop-up on your screen saying accept it. So do that. But if not, don't worry about it. We'll get you back at some other point. So let's talk about the medium. Now, both of you are obviously rich media, video or film. This is how you decide to tell your stories. Does it matter? I mean, is the story structure, is the technique the same irrespective of form, or does the medium actually play a significant role in the types of stories that can be told?
Yes. Charlie, take it. This one's yours.
One of the golden rules of screenwriting is show, don't tell. So that's the big difference between writing a novel and writing a screenplay. In when you write a novel, you can go, he looks at her and thinks whatever he thinks. In a film, you can't. You just have a guy looking at a girl, and either you put a voiceover or he tells somebody else what he thinks, but you can't have the audience imagine something that's there. That's one of the golden rules, show, don't tell. And so the medium actually matters in that respect. You can't cheat that. You can't hope that the audience is going to guess things that are not there. After that, it's, your storytelling is also, what I would take the question differently as well, I would remind you that storytelling is something you do at every contact point for the candidates, not just with the video. You do it during the interview. During the interview process, there's a bit of a sales pitch. There's a little bit of, look at us, this is what we do. Let me tell you a story that we've done. So you can do storytelling in many different ways, but whichever medium you use, be mindful of the rules and the limitations, but also the opportunities of that given medium.
Yeah, the rules that you've just mentioned, I think, are super important. Video, you're communicating a lot of information that's implicit. Or with film, it's implicit. Like, you have to just, you see it by the behavior of the people or the actor, whoever it is. It's not like written down. Written is explicit in my views. It's literally a declaration of what's happening. So that's worth thinking about in terms of how you can use that sort of rule of the format, if you like, to your benefit. It's quite interesting. It's probably going to take another big chunk of time to describe which medium is most suited to a particular type of story, but we don't quite have the time to go into that right away.
Maureen, you've got this one. There's a big difference between scripted and unscripted in film. So, whatever is scripted, there's always this doubt of, this is made to look pretty. Unscripted, which would be more like a documentary, testimonials, etc., feel more authentic, more from the heart. And these are actually the easiest ones to achieve. And, sort of ask your people, what's the best thing about working for you, or what's the biggest challenge and the obstacle, would be a great way to get some of that authenticity back out, and also some of their glorious moments from the past.
Yes, and please don't script your people. They're not professional actors. They can't pull it off. And when they read from a script, you can hear their voices go flat and it's not real. Let them talk. Let them talk.
All right. Hang about. You got to let them talk, but can we coach them to do better? How do we do that? So you've got the talent, so to speak. They're not talents that much because they're not professionals at this. They're doing something that on their, you pull this dude out of a warehouse, let's say. You say, right, we need you to say this. How do you coach that person to actually, deliver the sort of message that you want? Is there a way to do that?
You don't ask him to say something. You ask him, tell us your story. Tell us what happened to you. Tell us a great story. And you let them say it in their own word. And of course, you remind them at the beginning, we're on your side and you have as many takes as you want. And try to keep it under 20 seconds if you can. But if you can't, it's okay. We'll do it another time and we'll get a good editor to cut around. And then practice. It's good for them. It's good for you. And do it regularly. And, if only for the end of year sort of employee thing, hey, Steve had some funny stories to tell us and so had Jennifer. And isn't that funny? And it's great. And, and then some of them will become useful for comms and for your brand, ultimately.
Okay, so there's actually another good point. You should kind of overshoot if you can. Basically, don't be so precious to say, right, this is the 60 seconds we're going to do. No, you probably need to take 10 minutes worth or, whatever. Just keep the damn thing rolling and you're going to get some good stuff out of it. I actually learned this from a photographer friend of mine who, I was doing this project where basically I was doing profiles of people in the community, Braintree Tribune. And I was trying to learn how to tell people how to do photos. And a photographer friend of mine said, listen, forget about asking people to pose or to be professional because they don't know how to do it. What you want them to do is just take like zillions of shots. Like literally take loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of shots. Put it on like, burst mode on the mobile phone, and 1 out of 10 will be more than okay. So it's almost like you got to go use the technology, go for volume, and you'll be able to pick good stuff out of it. Okay, I think Mary Ellen was struggling to get her on. That's okay, no worries. Charlie, before we let you go, can you leave us with one thing? The world has changed in terms of our familiarity with video, not only with COVID-19, with the Zooms and stuff like this, but also with the prevalence of mobile devices, things like TikTok, Snapchat, Instagram. Those types of tools have really changed the way in which I think we're telling stories and how we're being sort of using these new formats. How does that impact the world of storytelling in your view? Does it mean we have to be more concise? What are the lessons we can learn from how people are behaving with, if you like, the democratization of film, you could put it in this way?
I think it's a question of, it's a very simple conclusion. You have more volume of material out there. Therefore, you get to expose more often to things that work and things that don't work. So you get a clear idea of what you like, what you don't like, what works, what doesn't work. And therefore we become shrewder in our choices. It's, the more stuff we have on, Netflix, Amazon, TikTok, Snapchat, whatever, the more selective we become. And, if it's not funny enough, it's not clear enough, it's not polished enough, we dismiss it because there is so much competition out there. And it also means that your audience, your candidates, are a lot shrewder about what is being sent at them. Is it authentic? Is it scripted? Is it real? Is it BS? And does it matter to them ultimately? So they're a lot smarter than we think.
That is probably the most important sort of thing, that the literacy of the audience has just increased by the exposure of different types of video format. And basically, you can't get away with the BS. I mean, if you just took a corporate video, I mean, Charlie, you did a bit of that work back in the day. You take some corporate video from 2005 and you try and float it today, brand killer straight away. That's not happening.
And then there was a great story, a great research study that Career Builders did. They looked at the videos on corporate career sites, to see only 1.5% of visitors ever watch those videos. I mean, they are so conditioned to, this is going to be a generic, not helpful video. Nobody watches them. And I would encourage everybody, go to your website, go look at the stats on the videos on your website to see if people are watching those, that you spent who knows how much money doing. We want video that's going to be relevant to us. We don't want the drone shot of the building. We really don't care about that. So go look at those stats, and I think you'll be amazed, because candidates really are discriminating. They're not going to spend their time watching something that's not going to help them move along in their journey. So the generic stuff just isn't going to cut it. Your candidates are way more sophisticated than you think they are.
And actually, just as I kind of are about to end that narrative arc, I'm just going to extend it just a little bit, because you mentioned something like how-to content is actually very interesting for candidates, it seems. Like if you show content that helps them progress in their story, that is something that immediately useful and compelling. So it's something I've noticed on my behavior in consuming YouTube, for instance. It's usually like I'm consuming stuff that teaches me how to do stuff. It's not just entertainment, it's infotainment. Okay, listen, that's it. Charlie, good to see you, man. We're gonna catch up. I'll be back in town in a couple of weeks, so we'll definitely catch up. Second jab happening in July, so we'll be having a few beers, man.
Amazing. I'm looking forward for it. Thank you very much. Thanks for all the questions, and best of luck out there.
Great. Thanks. Take care, Charlie.
Ciao.
What a great dude, eh? He had fun. So many great things to say. So sharp. And by the way, do check out Bright Shadow Films. There's some wonderful movies there, and great sort of documentaries and short films. So really cool to see. Maury, I'm going to hang on with you for a little while because we've got a bunch of questions. Let's pile through them and then see how we end this. Okay. So the first one here is from Chrissy. Chrissy saying, how do we evaluate what info candidates want to know and when? I think this goes back to your initial idea as to, in throughout the candidate journey, there's going to be different moments when a candidate wants disinformation. How do we know that's true? How do we know what information needs to go there.
Well, to some degree, your recruiters already know it, right? Because they're talking to candidates all the way through. Now, what information they want before they connect with you, you may want to do some research there. But once they get in the process, you know what they're asking you. You say all the time, you know, candidates may ask about the deductible on your dental plan before they're about to accept, but up front, they could care less. Like, they're not ready for that information. And I think too often we look at what questions people ask toward the end of the process and throw those in the beginning of the process. So we're real big believers in keep it short, keep it focused, and talk to your candidates. What makes someone decide to apply or not apply? What is that, you know, they go through a checklist in their mind of, you know, is this place, is the right location, or is this remote if that's important to me now? Is the job the right level? They go through a whole list of questions of things they want to know before they're ever willing to click that apply now button or respond to a recruiter. And then there's the next set of questions and so forth. If you think about that as a journey and a process and then match your information to it, you just get much more effective communication.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. So, Chrissy, the truth is we already know it. We just kind of know it in a way we haven't probably written down or have been particularly mindful of. So we just got to go back through that process and think about what types of information is being communicated. Okay, this question from Joe. Joe's saying, okay, I'm a career coach, and I find that people find it challenging to share their professional story. What are your thoughts on a candidate's personal professional story as opposed to a story to tell about an organization? So in other words, is there a difference between an individual's professional journey and a company's professional EVP?
Yes, of course there is. And part of that is the company story is much more complex because there are so many more parts to it. Not that humans can't be complex as well, but the need to match a piece of the story to a candidate is more difficult, I think, than for the candidate to figure out what in their experience and their journey is relevant to this company. It's a much narrower amount of information that they want to do. But it's still, I mean, we all like to talk to candidates. How many interviewers say, you know, kind of walk me through your career. How did you move from this job to this job and so forth? We want to hear the story. We want to hear that there's progression there. We all naturally flock to that format because it's comfortable for us and we know how to process it. So the fact that we ask people to take their resume and convert it to a story, I think is real evidence that that's how we want to consume information and match all the pieces together.
Yeah, I think so. And so different formats to that. That's well answered. Okay, let's go again. This is one from Eleanor. Eleni, I beg your pardon. Eleni's asking, what if the answers aren't impressive enough to turn into a great employer branding story? So this is the scenario where, okay, we're going to surface up the stories from the employee base, but you know what? They're not saying anything impressive. How do you deal with that?
I think you want to ask different questions. We actually had a client the other day, you know, our platform is all for employee generated content. And someone said, can you give us a list of questions to ask employees? And we said, no, because you tend to go to generic questions there and you tend to get generic answers back. So if you ask the same questions over and over again, your videos start to sound like everybody else's videos. One of the techniques we often encourage people to do is before you start filming anybody, put the camera down, you know, walk away, just talk to the employee about their work, like why they come, what they found challenging, what was a great day, you know, just get them to talk to you, just one-on-one as a human. Forget about filming, forget about putting it down into, just listen to them and find what makes them come back to work every day. Because all employees have options, right? But they choose to come to work for you every day if they're current employees. So the piece is, what is it that got satisfaction for them? What was challenging for them? How have they grown in this job? Find the piece that makes their eyes light up. There's a story there. Even for an hourly employee who's doing this for a paycheck, you know, I think all of us in management who, you know, we put so much satisfaction out of our challenges and our growth and all of that kind of stuff. And we really struggle when we find people who work for a paycheck. And the reality is, and the most people work because they need to put food on the table. They don't have the luxury of finding the job that gives them huge fulfillment. They just need to be able to support their families. Yet they do it in a way where they've got satisfaction from their work, their pride from their work. Someone said earlier, we tell stories to ourselves about us as workers, us as employees. find out what their story is. What is the story that keeps them going? It's there.
It is there. I think so. And I think the key is how you ask the question. So, Eleni, this is not a criticism on you, but it might be that you need to spend a different type of way, phrase the question differently or frame the conversation differently. So if you're sending out an email to people and saying, hey, let's hear your stories, that's not going to work. You got to invest a bit of time one-on-one with a lot of these folks and to really get to know them, get them to tell it in their own terms, and something will be there. Okay, cool. We're going to fly through these questions because we don't have much time. So Maury, I need to keep your answers to these next two questions to 60-second shots if I can. Okay, this is the one from Simon Hallcourt-Yard at over on LinkedIn right now. So thanks for watching, Simon. How do we convince companies that we need storytelling? Basically, we see a lot of corporate propaganda out there. How do we convince them that they need to tell the right content, the brave stories? You know, and this is where there is, it's not just a polished version of who they are. How do we give them the courage to say give the authentic view?
They're probably already telling stories with their marketing. Right, they're going out. You've got a website that sort of tells a story. Anything that they're doing for outreach, there's stories out there. If you're having trouble translating that to recruiting, I'll go back to pilot. You can produce a video on your phone for no money with no approvals. You know, there's nothing stopping you from getting an example of an employee talking about what it's like to be there. Show them what it looks like, you know, give it to them, and then put that, we do all the time, we put, you know, videos of hiring managers talking about a job, put it next to a job description, put it up and go, okay, you want us to attract candidates. I've got this job description. I've got this multimedia, you know, engaging piece. What is it you want me to use to staff this organization? It really can be that simple.
Yep, fantastic. Okay, final question. This is from Michael. So we're going to end the show with this. What advice would you give to convince C-level leaders who want to keep things within the boundaries? So you want to do something really creative. C-level's is hesitant. You need to give advice. Someone's come to you with Maury with this issue. Say, listen, I want to do this. Boss is saying no. Can you give me some ways in which I can persuade him? How would you coach this person?
To some degree, you may have to stay within boundaries. That may just be a reality. But I'd go back to create a sample, show them what it looks like. You know, what are they afraid of? Are they afraid you're going to make the organization look unprofessional? Are you afraid you're going to offend people? These days, whatever medium you're in, it's so easy to produce things for essentially no cost. Show them what it is you're talking about, and then keep evolving them and keep educating them.
That's it. Give them a sample. You don't have to have the big bite right there, Mike. So if there's something, you've got a friction point, go away and do something and say, hey, this is what we want to go. And then maybe their frame will change, because sometimes people need to consume information in a different way. There may be a storytelling challenge internally there, because the CEO may be receiving the information in a way that is tapping into that emotional sort of a core that we know is in there. That is it, folks. So, wow, what a show. I'm so stoked by this one. This is, by the way, the feedback's been amazing. I've been tracking some of the chat here. People are really enthused by it. Isn't it wonderful, by the way, folks, that when we get people from outside of the industry to come in and show us their trade and how they do things? Because I think we can learn so much from intradisciplinary, cross-disciplinary learning like this. You know, I'm tempted to go out and get a bunch of welders in to turn up next time and tell us how to weld something. I guarantee you will learn a ton. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes, absolutely, as recruiters in HR, we end up just talking a lot to ourselves and in amongst ourselves. Yeah. And guess what? We build a bubble there. And we end up, right, you know, we talk about echo chambers, you know, well, holy crap, we're in an
reinforce our constraints. Yeah, all of that.
Exactly, yep. Exactly. Well, Maury, listen, it's been wonderful having you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. I'd love to get you back. In fact, we need to get you back for many other reasons other than, you know, co-hosting. There's all kinds of things we can talk about. So hopefully this experience hasn't jaded you and you'd be happy to give a return visit at some point.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Great.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Maury.
Okay. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Wow. Wasn't that great, folks? So I'm really excited by this. Like, so many things that I need to write down and think, whoa, I need to, A, become more creative. I need to train my creativity. And I need to think about how, you know, you can create stories which resonate with the audience. You know, how can we work with something that is at one point familiar, but on the other side, which allows people to resonate with it quickly, but then surprises them with something they haven't seen before. I think that might be something which is a key component to maybe how brain food needs to work. Anyway, folks, if you've enjoyed that conversation, make sure you follow the channel. We do this type of show every week, so you won't miss anything else. You can watch it on replay or on demand after this point once you've registered. Free to register, obviously. So go ahead and do that. Do watch out for the newsletter happening on Sunday as well, so we get a lot of our ideas. That's coming out on Sunday, recruitingbrainfood.com. And I'm also doing a new newsletter now called This Week in Recruiting. That's happening on Monday, so make sure you subscribe to that. Final shout out to our sponsors today, CA3, of which Noel Thomas, by the way, came in and did and was amazing in terms of describing the kind of service, and you got a flavor, I think, a little bit of the sort of work you might get from this company. So storytelling, employer branding, any kind of thing that you want to do to get your message out to the wider audience, do check out this business. I've just shared the link in the chat stream there, so make sure you check them out. Okay, that's about it for me, folks. You have a good day, great weekend. We'll see you next time.